managing distress. Right, okay, so what I want to try and talk about here is sort of practical kind of session. How do we deal with behaviour which perhaps is outside our comfort zone? And, you know, there's a couple of things like, you know, for example, Sunday, things on Sunday that perhaps are not ideal for everybody. You know, Sunday's got a very particular function, but what we don't want to do is sanitize it and, you know, be sort of Morningside, they would call it, where I live, okay? We don't want to do that. Or it could be in small group. Obviously, there's a number of roles of small group, and how do we handle it when someone is emotional, for want of a better term, in small group? So there's a couple of settings there, but it could equally apply to if you're doing an outreach ministry or youth work or something like that. How do we sort of think about these things when they arise? And by illustration on the next slide, I went to just before I got married, I was in Yorkshire and in Bradford, and I was then imported to Scotland, which is another whole story. But I went to a church called Abundant Life Church, as it was back then in Bradford. It's quite a big church. Used to meet in a warehouse. And one of the things that Paul, who is the pastor, used to say was, can you leave your handbag lying around this church? Okay. And what he was sort of saying was, if you can leave your handbag lying around the church and no one nicks it, then the church is not doing its job. It's not inviting the right people in to church. And I think sometimes in churches we have this sort of model on the left there, which is we want people to behave in a certain way, you know, to have the correct length of hair and wear skirts or hats or whatever it is and be like us in some way. And then we will be thinking about things like believing and doing a sort of short new believers course or a catechism, depending on which part of the church you're in. And only when you've done that are you allowed to sort of belong and take Holy Communion, be a church member and all that sort of stuff. And I suppose my point is that's not the way Jesus did ministry. The way Jesus did ministry was he encouraged people to belong. Now, the disciples were a pretty ragbag collection who still had some major issues, even at the time of the early church. There were people in his slightly wider circle who'd come from all kinds of backgrounds, including prostitution. And you've also got like David and the mighty men who do a whole bunch of slightly dodgy things in 2 Samuel there. And they belong. They are just in there. And then the grace of Jesus and the transformation of the Holy Spirit takes us to a point of belief. And only really at that point is the behavior challenged. You know, we may have views about social norms or areas where we think our society is straying morally, for example. But actually, why wouldn't they think some of those things if they don't have the belief in God and the belief in the Bible that we have? So we want to have a place where people can belong, and then we work on the belief, and then the behavior. I'm still doing that. I'm still working on my behavior. I'm still learning to behave, and some I can be a petulant child. I can be too strict and assume the parent position, which forces my child to regress. I have 2 teenage boys, and they do regress from time to time, but I probably don't help it. And I'm still working on my behavior. So why would we ask any difference? We should have a church where handbags get nicked. Okay, and obviously, don't want the handbags to get nicked, but we need to have a rich and encouraging ministry. I know some of you are members of church in a different environment. Now, I'm sure everyone is very, very well behaved in the Viewforth area of Edinburgh, but there are churches that are more obviously in more dubious areas. The church I went to in Bradford, we had to have people on the door because people would turn up intoxicated. Okay, we had to have people on the door who could negotiate kind of what I'm about to talk about. It had to happen that way just in order to make Sunday happen. But it's about how do we engage those people? How do we involve those people? How do we help them belong to the point where they can believe? And then perhaps they have both the personal motivation and the spiritual assistance to behave. Next slide. No behavior management until. Okay, and what I mean by this is, and this is, I think, something that I think you'll understand, one of the sort of rules of church, I think, should be you cannot employ a youth worker until you allow youth to contribute to church life. Okay, so they are going to want to turn the music up. They are going to want to hang out. They will have smelly trainers, okay? These are the things that we have to kind of accept. And what we can't do is employ a youth worker to deal with the smelly youth over there and keep that on a Friday night. Please, we want to have. So a similar kind of thing. I don't think you should have a church counselor until you've had a session like this. I don't think you should have a church counselor until you've had a mental health Sunday for the whole church, okay? We need to be mainstreaming this as a topic rather than saying that room over there with the pastel colours and the box of tissues, that's where emotions happen. We don't want that elsewhere. So no behaviour management until these things have been thought through. And just the next slide, there's a quote, an alcoholic friend of Philip Yancey. Some of you will know Philip Yancey as a writer. An alcoholic friend of Philip Yancey once said to him, "When I'm late for church, people turn around and stare at me with frowns of disapproval. I get the clear message that I am not as responsible as they are. When I'm late to AA, the meeting comes to a halt. Everyone jumps up to hug and welcome me." They realize, I'm getting emotional because this is so important, they realize that my lateness may be a sign I almost didn't make it. Okay? When I show up, it proves my desperate need for them and for Jesus won out over my desperate need for alcohol. Okay, and that, I think, if we can get that in our heads, we begin to think about how we might do mental health ministry. And actually then also apply it to us as well. Because, you know, one of the rules of AA is everyone's an alcoholic, even if you've been sober for 20 years. Okay. So by illustration of that, I want to talk a little bit about the story in Mark 5. About the title in some of the Bibles is, you know, the Gerasene demoniac or the healing of a demon-possessed man. And it's quite close to the start of Jesus' ministry. So there's a number of things that you could do. If you were preaching on this, there's a number of things you might do. You might say, okay, we've had three parables and this is one of three miracles of faith. And it's kind of boom, kickstart. Jesus talks about the kingdom and he shows the kingdom. It's how Jesus started his ministry. So you can slot it into that metric. You can also slot it in between two times where Jesus was excluded. He's mad, they said beforehand. His family said he was mad. And then after these two sets of three, a prophet hath no honor in his own town, and he could do no miracles here. So, you know, there's a number of ways to look at this passage of Scripture. But what I want to try and do is to think about what was the cause of this man's problems. And just that the story is, basically, Jesus is going from, as he sometimes does in the Gospels, he's going from one side of the lake to the other and back here and back there. And what happens this time is he lands. Have we got a Bible? I think I might just read it out. So Mark chapter 5, okay. So they came to the other side of the lake, to the country of the Gerasenes. And when Jesus had stepped out of the boat, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit. He lived among the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For he had often been bound with shackles and chains, and he wrenched the chains apart, and he broke the shackles in pieces. No one had the strength to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and the mountain, he was always crying out and cutting himself with stones. And then he saw Jesus from afar, and he ran and fell down before him. And crying out with a loud voice, he said, "What have you got to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I adjure to you by God, do not torment me." For he was saying to him, "Come out of the man, you unclean spirit." And Jesus said to him, "What is your name?" And he said, "My name is Legion, for we are many." And he begged him earnestly not to send him out of the country. Now there was a great herd of pigs was feeding there on the hillside, and they begged to him, saying, "Send us to the pigs, let us enter into them." So he gave them permission, and the unclean spirits came out and entered the pigs, and the herd, numbering about 2,000, rushed down the steep bank into the sea and drowned. The herdsmen fled and told it in the city and in the country, and people came to see what happens. And they came to see Jesus and saw this man who was once demon-possessed sitting there and clothed in his right mind. And they were afraid. And those who had seen it described to them what had happened to the demon-possessed man and the pigs. And they began to beg Jesus to depart from their region. And as he was getting into the boat, the man who had been possessed with demons begged him that he might go with them. And Jesus said, "No, you cannot come with me." But he said to him, "Go home to your friends and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you. And he went away and began to proclaim in the Decapolis, or the 10 nearby towns, how much Jesus had done for him. And everyone marveled. Thank you. So, on the next slide, we could say, what was the issue here? Was it a spiritual issue? I mean, Jesus did cast out a demon or two, and that seems to be what's going on here. Is it a psychological issue here? Jesus spoke more words to this man than I expect he'd heard in years. And he spoke to his heart in a changing and transformational and an empowering way. Was it a social issue? Why had the townspeople excluded him? And had that contributed to his madness just by being alone? Did Robinson Crusoe go mad? Quite, you know, this social isolation contributes, or biological. Is it early schizophrenia? Was this an early description of schizophrenia that we see here? Personally, it's not quite like the patients I see, but, you know, is that what's going on? And then I did say I'd mention the pigs, so we've got the next slide there. What are these little piggies about, okay? Was it spiritual punishment? Because they had unclean animals, they're keeping unclean animals in the Holy Land, they shouldn't have been done that. Was it destruction of their social livelihood because they'd sent him into social exclusion? Was Jesus saying they were biologically closer to the pigs than this man that he'd healed? Or was it a psychological rebuff? He thought he was casting his pearls before swine to mix my Bible verses up. Okay, so I don't know where the pigs fit in, that's just a little bit of fun. But what I do want to do is look about how Jesus saw him. So just on the next slide there. He landed near the man, not in town. He didn't go to the harbor. He went to the beach near this man. They saw each other from a distance. That's what we're told in the passage. He didn't run from the shouting. He walked towards the shouting. He addressed him as a man. He asked him his name. He clothed him. He sat him down. He restored his mind. He gave him a job, a role, and a purpose, to the extent that the next time Jesus came to that area, he had to feed 5,000 people. Okay, he was the first evangelist in the New Testament, and the second best one apart from Paul. Okay, his ministry was amazing. And if you like three P's, those of you who want to preach on this, all right, he went from possessed to placid to preacher. Well, this one's even worse. He went from psychotic to seated to sane. And my reason for putting that up there is Jesus saw him, and because he was Jesus, he kind of addressed everything at the same time. He healed any biological illness that was going on. Spiritually, he addressed his spirituality at a number of levels, right the way through from commissioning to identity to deliverance. I tend to use the word deliverance rather than exorcism, by the way. He socially reintegrates him and says to him, go back to your village. You now live there. You belong there in your community. And psychologically, he gave him identity, role, purpose, etc. He did all these things together. So Jesus did all these things. And he managed to, I mean, Jesus did that in a particularly challenging situation. Okay, I'm not suggesting that that is going to how it's going to be happen. But what I want us to do is to this is going to require a little bit of challenge and thinking, a little bit of lateral thinking from you, okay? Pick a church environment. You've got the next slide there, Janita, please. Pick a church environment. Now, I suggested, you know, it could be Sunday. Imagine this man rocked up on Sunday. What are you going to do, okay? Or it could be small group, perhaps, where it might be unlikely to have this guy rocking up to small group, but it could happen, although it could be other behavior at small group, which is challenging, like, you know, people turn up, perhaps, with an alcohol problem, or they turn up very distressed, or maybe even suicidal or something, you know, something that's going to rock the boat in either of those two situations. And I quite like you to pick a table that makes you uncomfortable. Now, when we do these things, okay, I don't want you to pick like the worst thing imaginable that's like 10 out of 10 uncomfortable. I want you to try and pick something that's going to make you uncomfortable enough to want to do something about it. But those two things could be either that you over-control or anything goes. Okay, so we want something which is a bit challenging that perhaps tempts you to either over-control or be over-lax. And, you know, the over-control thing might be, we don't do that here, we're British, kind of response, okay? Not allowed. Right the way through to the other thing, which is anything goes. We're not going to challenge it, even though it's clearly repeating embarrassment for that person, and it's very distressing for the other people who are there, and you're not achieving the primary purpose of whatever that particular environment is, be it a Sunday meeting or a smaller group meeting or a ministry. So the anything goes end of the spectrum, and then you've got the we don't do that here, we're British kind of end of the spectrum. And in between, I want you to think about ideally 10 middle situations, okay? So for example, just inside anything goes could be, I'm not going to deal with it at the moment, but I am going to try and talk to that person afterwards. Okay? So what you're doing is you're edging, beginning to deal with it. And then at the over-strict thing might be, for example, if it's an alcohol problem, I think it might be a good idea if you didn't come to the evening service for a while, because you always seem to be intoxicated. How about you come to the morning service for a few weeks and we'll see how we go? Okay? So I want you to try and think about 10 things in between here and there. There's no right or wrong answer. Okay, and don't forget that the aim here is to see people where they're at and to include people as much as is possible. Now, Jesus did the deliverance on the beach. He didn't do the deliverance in the town, okay? He didn't walk arm in arm with the guy into town and do it there. He found a place to do it. So as much as possible, include, but also, the thing about these stages is that they are developmental, okay? They are stages that perhaps people can sort of work through or work towards and therefore grow and be healed and included in community as a result. But there are some things where you may need to say, not now, okay, not here. So it's quite a challenging task for you. You've got a big bit of A3 paper. What I want is anything goes at one end through to not here, please, we're British. And you've got 10 post-it notes to kind of scatter along a spectrum. And we'll give you 10 minutes, a good 10 minutes to do that. Okay, off you go. Okay, so what I'm not gonna do is try and sort of go around and get examples and descriptions, because you'll all have picked different things. Some of you picked a sort of, you know, someone who's psychotic, maybe on Sunday. Some people were picking an issue that perhaps wasn't a mental health illness, but was still, you know, challenging behavior in some churches. So how does that work? We have people rugby tackling people at the extreme end of the spectrum through let them rugby tackle you. At the other end of the spectrum from anything goes. So we had everything. I mean, probably some people were doing sort of small groups and non-Sunday settings. So I'm just going to sort of land this, and then we'll have some time for Q&A. So if we've got the next slide, please, Janita. What was it like discussing these things? Was it difficult? Did it all unravel? And I guess, you know, one of the reasons why I want to do this is we want to start discussing this now, because the more you can discuss it before it happens, the more thought through you are and you've kind of agreed your approach and so on like that. And that's why we're going to have a session after lunch thinking around pastoral care and a pastoral care policy. You want your pastoral care policy written before you need it. Okay, so we want to be thinking some of this through. Did you all disagree on the right approach? You know, what would Jesus have done? Were some of you more permissive? Were some of you sort of more strict? And there's going to be variations. There's going to be cultural things, perhaps older people, younger people, background. You know, there will be a range of things. And by God's grace, he's given us a range of churches as well in this city. So there's not always a right approach. Did you struggle to come up with 10 middle ways? I've got 13 for Sunday on the next slide, okay? But it's hard work to sort of think about this, because if we just come up with three, first of all, it's not developmental. And also, you know, we might sort of be pushing people into certain boxes. Were there any red herrings of avoidance, or were they actually important? So sometimes we get sort of ideas in our head that something, you know, should we talk to the church leadership about this? You know, it could be one of the things, and we'll pick up on that this afternoon. But ultimately, really what we need to do is actually just be quite practical here. So if I give you an example from Sunday on the next slide, these sort of get more strict as you go down, okay? So the first is, I'd encourage you to have space at the back of the church rather than the front. So if you go into your typical church, there's always a bit of space empty at the front, like these seats here. and everyone's all squashed to the back. But remember Philip Yancey's alcoholic friend, all right? Let's leave some seats at the back where he can come and sit without having to walk all the way to the front. And never, ever joke about the fact there are empty seats at the front, okay? Because for some people, it's not a joke, all right? So those of you who've made that joke, you can now repent and ask forgiveness, and I'll do healing prayer later. But let's not do that. Let's have space at the back of church where people can come and go. I went to an Orthodox wedding once. It took 4 hours. You were meant to come and go. You were meant to sort of nip and get some food or go and get a cup of tea or go for a fag or whatever it was. The dude just carried on. He had one of those amazing beards that goes two ways and he did the whole thing in Aramaic. Do you know what I mean? He just kind of carried on. It was very incarnational as ministry goes. And I think there's actually, joking apart, sometimes going to a very liturgical church can actually be quite good if you're struggling with your mental health, because you just fit in. Go and eat up some Book of Common Prayer 1662, because you can titrate how close you get to the ministry, whereas sometimes happy-clappy churches, or for want of a better description, it can be quite difficult because you feel left out. I used to go to this wonderful place called St. Boltoff's, which was this wonderful sort of smells and bells 1662 church in Cambridge. About once a term, I just go there and just be. And there's a space for that. Tolerate coming again, be more orthodox. You know, have an informal sit with plan, which is, I wonder if we could have an arrangement where perhaps someone sits with you for the services. And, you know, there's two or three people, and one of us will always be around to sit with you. Perhaps have that discussion. Then what you might do is you want to meet off site, so you meet them at the corner. You can tell whether they're intoxicated or not before you actually get to the church door. Always quite a useful thing to do. Or you can sit together out there or in the quiet room and watch the live stream together. Then we're getting a little bit more formal, where perhaps you have to sort of say, right, okay, there were some rules now. One of the rules is you can't come in the evening because you're always drunk. But come in the morning, love to see you, okay? You can't come until you've seen your GP or a mental health professional. We are worried about you, and actually you continuing to come here is not helping anyone. So we would like you, please, to go and see your GP. When you've seen your GP, you don't have to tell us what happens, but when you've done that, then you can come back. You have a formal sit with plan. You have like kind of a sort of formal list, and you kind of have a register and a rota and so on, and maybe even a written contract. And perhaps you review that after a period. You say, we're going to do this for the next 6 weeks and see how we go. And then the next thing might be, right, Sunday's not happening, okay? But I'll meet you the every Wednesday for a cuppa, and we'll talk about it then, and we'll do a whole bunch of things. It could be that you have a ban, but I would suggest that's time limited and it's conditional, okay? So you are banned for 6 weeks, but we would love to have you back in this kind of situation. We're not banning you forever. And then the most extreme level, I suppose, is where you actually involve the police and you say, look, you cannot come. There's a thing called the Telecommunications Act, which deals with abusive phone calls, et cetera, et cetera. So that's gone all pretty strict, okay? And hopefully you will not find yourself in those last few stages at any point. But I'd like to think that the first sort of seven or eight are happening based on the handbags rule. Can I come back and we'll get questions at the end if that's okay? All right, so on the next slide there, just what have we been talking about today? There's a few things we've been speaking about. I think the first thing was, you know, that sort of Carl Jung quote, show me a sane man and I will cure him. We've been talking about, you know, having that sort of focus on mental health in the whole church. So we've had discussions like this so we can actually bring them in. That sort of belong, believe, behave, whichever order that is, belong, behave, believe kind of thing. But belonging's got many forms. There is a wide spectrum about how people can belong. Some people may just wish to come on to small group or just meet one-to-one, and there may be a reason why they cannot come on Sunday for a period. Now, we wouldn't want that to be everyone's experience forever, but that is okay for a season. What would Jesus do? Addressing all four causes again. It's not a public space. I think a lot of people think, it's church, I can come in. Well, you can't stop me. It's like, yes, you can. This is a private building with rules. And you can challenge behavior. You can stop people coming. So don't feel that you need to be nice Christians and anything goes. You can have rules. And I would suspect if you're doing ministry, more challenging ministry, you will need rules and be willing to enforce them. How would Jesus do it? You see, even when you're doing the more strict things, you're still seeing the person. And you've got your eyes on the prize here, which really is restoring these leaders or these people and ultimately releasing mission, like Jesus did with the Bible story I read out. He saw the person, he restored him, and as a result, we had someone who got 5,000 people next time Jesus was in town. I'll just finish with a few words from 1 Thessalonians, just on the next slide, if we can, please. This is the Message translation. Speak encouraging words to one another. Build up hope so you'll all be together in this. No one left out, no one left behind. Our counsel is that you warn the freeloaders to get a move on. Gently encourage the stragglers. Reach out for the exhausted, pulling them to their feet. Be patient with each person, attentive to individual needs. And be careful that when you get on each other's nerves, don't snap at each other. Look for your best in each other and always do your best to bring it out. That's good pastoral care from St. Paul.